はい、show tonight. I'm Dougie Poole. This is a special delivery. I'm going to do some songs. Malcolm Harris is here. Ferdy Gulls are here. Here at Pete's Candy Store. Peter's Candy Store. Okay. This is a song by Fred Neil. Made popular by Harry Nilsson in the film Midnight Cowboy. Everybody's talking at me, but I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echo of my mind. People stop and stare, but I don't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. Going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of northeast winds, sailing on the summer breeze. Skipping over the ocean like a stone. Thank you.
a song called The Freelancer's Blues. I was a freelancer for a long time. I'm still a freelancer. Shout out to all you out there. So I was an art handler, freelance art handler. I probably say that once a show. This is that time, this show. And, one morning, Miguel and I were set to leave for a job in the company Sprinter van. When he turned off the radio and he put his forehead into his hand, we sat briefly in the quiet of the ticking hazard light. Till I said, "Man, are you all right?" And he replied, "You know I'm only passing through. This job's not what I'm supposed to do. Pays the rent and fills the fridge while I plan my next move. But the months turn into checks disappear, and I'm stuck here with you, but I'm only passing through." Ladina's my companion now. She has been about a year. Met online, now two times, now we're laying here, reading emails side by side. What a gift to be alive. And I smile as she catches my eye in my mind. I know better love for me than you. Keeps me warm, my heart's on the hunt for somebody new. But the months turn into years, and the words ring in my ears, and I'm stuck here with you. Come on, we're passing through. My dad, he was a tricky man, but maybe so am I. Some love so tough to understand, we never thought to try. The old sickness came on slow, and the next thing that I know, I'm kneeling by his side, saying goodbye. You know I'm only passing through. Diet's what I was born to do. So dry your tears, and while you're at it, fluff my pillow too. My body's failing me, sleep's my one release, and I'm stuck here. I got one more song. This is in my house growing up, my parents really liked Jim Croce. He died in a plane crash. Great mustache. Good songs. I heard this song on the radio recently. They play it sometimes on the Q. 104.3. And it reminded me of the first time I heard it, which was I don't want to talk about that. Sorry. Okay. Jim Croce's song, Operator. Operator, can you help me place this call? Number on the matchbook is old and faded. She's living in L.A. with my best old ex-friend Ray. Guy she said she knew well but sometimes hated. Well, isn't that the way they say it goes? But let's forget all that. Give me a number if you can find it, so I can call just to tell them I'm fine and to show. Vogel come blow, learn to take it well. I only wish my words could just convince myself it just wasn't real. That's not the way it feels. Operator, can you help me place this call? So I can't read the number that you just gave me. There's something in my eye, you know it happens every time. Think about the love that I thought would save me. Isn't that the way they say it goes? But let's forget all that. Give me a number if you can find it, so I can call just to tell them I'm fine and show. I've overcome the blow, learned to take it well. Only wish my words could just convince myself that it just wasn't real. That's not the way it feels. Operator, will you forget about this call? There's no one over there that I wanted to talk to. Thank you for your time. You've been so much more than kind. You can keep the dime. Isn't that the way they say it goes? Well, let's forget all that. Give me a number if you can find it, so I can call just to tell them I'm fine and to show. I've overcome the blow, learned to take it well. Only wish my words could just convince myself that it just wasn't real. But that's not the way it feels. That's not the way it feels. Thank you.
Doug, I really like your description of Jim Croce. It sounds
Croce?
Like... Croce? Oh, shut the fuck up. You tuned for like 3 minutes. Don't judge me.
It sounds like you were describing
Croce's
him to the police.
What would connect eyeglasses? It's like the thing that goes on eyeglasses to keep them from falling off your face.
How's your summer going? It's almost done.
Thank God.
Summer's the worst. It's the worst season. Nobody talks about it. It's too hot. You feel gross all the time. Everything
bill
smells
very
bad.
High.
What?
Electricity bill very high.
Yeah, electricity bill is high. Going outdoors is uncomfortable. Sleeping's uncomfortable. Life is miserable.
Got to wear shorts.
Yeah, depends. Like a year ago, I would have not liked that, but my legs are looking pretty tight, so I like wearing shorts this summer. Yeah.
But you're not right now.
Yeah, I'm not. It's because I haven't shaved this week. Don't laugh at that. That's why I'm not wearing shorts. You drink any White Claws this summer?
No, I don't like that brand.
Wait, is that isn't that just our option? Like, what brand of what? Alcohol?
Oh, come on.
Bad decision? Like, what?
I like Bon and Viv. Fine. The best brand is...
It's Bon Iver.
It's called... Arctic Summer.
Wait.
Bipolar.
Brand...
Polar Seltzer.
Okay. We're talking seltzer. Because I thought we were
Arctic Summer is alcoholic seltzer.
Well, yeah. I thought we were... I knew we were talking about alcohol, but I thought we were talking about, like, the genre of alcohol that is bad hangover alcohol marketed to teens. But we're talking specifically seltzer.
I think... Yeah.
I thought White Claw was the only seltzer. I haven't had it.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, welcome.
Is the appeal of it that it's like a intentional bad decision, or does it actually taste good? Because I'm down with intentional bad decisions. I'm just, for some reason, I'm not down with things that like, I want alcohol for the drunk part. I don't necessarily think that one alcohol tastes better than the other.
It's just light, so you can drink it at the beach.
As you bring up working as a freelance art handler every episode, I will bring up that I hate nature and do not go to the beach.
I'm getting out.
Okay. Everyone, thanks for coming. We have a really good show. Verdi Girls is playing, and... Malcolm Harris is on the show. Malcolm, 2 years ago, put out a book called Kids These Days, which I read this year, and it's my favorite book of the year, and I'm really honored to be talking to him. Kids These Days, it's about what defines the millennial generation, but from a lens of labor and our economic situation. So everyone, please clap for Malcolm as he takes 30 seconds to walk to the stage.
How many seconds do I have left to, like,
15.
Get fully behind the mic over here?
So, first thing I want to talk to you about is my favorite thing about your book.
That's good. Let's not start with the least favorite. That can come later.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get there. That's the end note. I'm going to just start list everything I thought you got wrong. I really enjoyed how you did a really accurate job of describing the conditions that a group of people all live in and focusing on, like, the things that don't really have any sort of... intended actions behind them. Like, regardless of what people choose for themselves, these are the circumstances that we live in. This is the way that Social Security is trending. This is the way in which public schools are structured. These are material, objective things. One of the things you don't talk a lot about is the culture that was consumed by this generation. And I feel like a lot of the times when I'm reading diagnoses of millennials, but kind of any generation, the focus tends to be on what did these people consume that made them the way they are. Mm-hmm. And you do not do that at all. Is that intentional?
Yeah, definitely. Well, when you look at the discourse around generations is almost always, at least for a couple generations now, centered around product consumption. Because the first people to talk about any generation and label any generation are these marketers. And they're marketers whose job it is to help companies sell stuff to this cohort of young people. And that's the first people who are looking at that group and saying, like, these are their characteristics. You know, this is how we can get what we want out of them. This is who they are. This is what they have in common. But what they're looking at is consumption. Like, that's the only information they have. And in terms of, like, their role in society, you don't know anything because those are, like, 10-year-olds, right? They don't, like, have a role in society. We don't know what kind of people they are because they're still becoming those people. But the people who are selling them products don't really care if you're, like, fully formed or whatever before they start describing your characteristics. They have lists of characteristics for 10-year-olds because 10-year-olds still buy stuff or just influence parent consumption decisions. Something that I think really increases a lot with this cohort, and I talk about that a little bit in the book.
Do you think that consumption matters a good deal?
No. I mean, it's important, but it's not what drives society, right? What drives society is the relations of production, right? How you create stuff and create value in the first place. We focus a lot on consumption because it's the easiest data to produce, I think, is a big part of it. Because every time you buy something, that's automatically registered. It's automatically registered with a bunch of people who have interest in recording that and then making further use of it. So consumption behavior generates a lot of data. Other kinds of behavior, maybe not quite as much.
One of the things about consumption and the discourse behind it that I find really frustrating is consumption is one of the only things you can really control on an individual level. And I don't know the balance that people have. I don't know how people can balance wanting to do the right thing outside of consumption. And when people focus on consumption, I don't know if it is... I don't know if the fact that we participate in it creates an illusion of, like, agency. Like, do we have agency in the things we... Well, do not in the things we consume, but through the things we consume.
Not really, I don't think. There's this saying, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, right? Which means, like, there's no thing you can buy in a capitalist system that is the right thing that's going to somehow, like, undo exploitation. The problem, I think, is some people hear that slogan and think, like, oh, that means, like, no choice I make matters. Like, it doesn't matter how I, like, treat people because there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. And it's, like, an all-purpose excuse for being, like, an asshole as long as you belong to the right political organization or think the right political thoughts, like, whatever excuses people use.
Is that misconception, like, a good faith or a bad faith misconception?
I'm sure there's both. There are people who, like, use anti-capitalism.
Wait, I'm going to cut you off.
Asshole.
Rephrase this question.
Yeah.
Do you feel lied to?
All the time, yeah.
No,
you mean, like, personally by you right
no,
now?
No, as somebody in, like, your age consort, do you feel lied to?
Yeah, man. Like, like do you in think really, like, freaky ways all the time.
Do you think the lies you were told were good faith or bad faith lies? Bad faith lies being obvious, but good faith lies being, like, you could be anything you want to be.
There were some good and bad ones. I think, like, you can be anything you want to be, like, theoretically was probably, like, true about me when I was growing up, except for, like, a basketball player or something. I guess this is radio. You can't see I'm 5'6 on the radio. But so I talk a little bit in the book about environmentalism and how environmentalism was sold to kids my age at the time. If you remember, like, Captain Planet. And Captain Planet was like, you know, tell your mom to recycle cans and bottles because, like, you're going to kill sea turtles. And, like, this is how you can contribute to your society.
Wait, are the sea turtles not saved? Did we not do it?
I'm not
Did
sure
we
the
fuck
status
this up?
Of sea turtles. Right. So they gave us these sort of, like, things you could do as kids in terms of, like, changing your
so
household
hard.
Consumption. And kids did try so hard and found out. I remember doing, like, organizing a, you know, like, marsh cleanup day or whatever. And you found out that that's not really, like, what matters. That's not going to, like, save our environment. Our environment has gotten, like, way, way more fucked up since I was a kid in Captain Planet. And it has nothing to do with us recycling or not. And now, in fact, well-informed young people would tell you that recycling itself was, like, bullshit the whole time. Which is kind of disturbing. And so, like, some of that was good faith. Like, some people thought they were doing the right thing by recycling. Some people knew it was bullshit. Like, where do we lie on that spectrum?
Another thing your book does really well is talk in a very frank way about the idea of personal capital. Like, I invested in myself, and therefore I'm going to be worth either something in higher wages or a better lifestyle or social mobility. Or you also talk about how the returns are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So as a generation of people invest more in their personal capital and they are getting less in return, that could mean two opposing things. It could either mean that your personal capital means even more than it used to because it's more necessary because mm-hmm. you're competing for fewer and fewer spots, but it could also mean that it's worthless. Which do you think it is?
Well, it's sort of both, and one of the ways that it's...
No, it can't be both. It's binary. Pick one right now.
Well, because the problem
you're
is
being
you're,
recorded.
Dealing, you're dealing with like individual and aggregate effects, right? As an individual, you say people sometimes ask me, like, what would you tell a kid about who's going to college? Like, is it worth it to go to college? And it's like, for one kid, yes, it absolutely is. The best thing you can do for building your income, your earning potential, every social scientist agrees, is like, get a college education. It doesn't matter necessarily like where it is, depending on where you come in the income division. But like college education. At the same time, when you're dealing with an aggregate effect, the value of a college education, the premium for a college, it's called the college wage premium, is what you get paid for going to college, basically, over what somebody who didn't go to college gets paid. That increase has been driven almost entirely by falling wages for people who don't have a college education. So it's like, it's not about what you can get if you go to college so much as like what you can't have if you don't go to college. That gap has increased, and that separation has increased. And so you think like, wow, like life sort of sucks even if you go to college. Like, is college really worth it? It's like, well, look at what happens if you don't go to college. And life is getting like way suckier, way faster on that end. So, yeah, it's this the issue with human capital, and when developing human capital, is you don't really own it, right? If you go to Harvard or whatever, you can't go and then sell your diploma for $500,000 or whatever. All you can do is work. And when you work, maybe your work gets paid at a higher rate than someone else's work, maybe because you went to Harvard. But it's not capital that you own that you can then just like sit back and have somebody else work on. It's just a description of your ability to work. So people sometimes get that confused and think like people own their human capital. You don't own your human capital. It doesn't work that way. And as more of it is produced in this aggregate way, you see demand shift down for human capital in general because there's so much of it around.
Can you negatively invest?
Can you like make like, bad investments in your human capital?
Like,
that's actually an interesting question.
Can you opt out?
Of working if you have a bunch of money?
Out of the larger system. Like, a thing that you very accurately pinpointed the feeling of is that cell phones kind of tether us to a system of working at all times, mm-hmm. and it also blurs the lines between working and being off the clock, and also blurs the lines between things you're doing for leisure being things that are actually building capital for other companies. The last episode of the show, we talked about how things like usage in TikTok is actually just getting teenagers to invest in the capital of companies that are trying to grow their user base. And it feels like there used to be, and I can't tell if this was ever real or not, but there used to be a feeling that you could opt out of, like, the system, mm-hmm. quote unquote, in a way that you can't now. Peter Fonda died a week ago,
right.
And one of my favorite movies to hate watch every year is Easy Rider, because it, if you ever want to explain what the fuck is going on with your grandparents, watch that movie. These people have been poisoned since they were teenagers. It's basically about how you can drop out of society and ride a motorcycle across the country and not play into a system at all. And if you watch it now, it is clearly an illusion. These people are still plugged in to some degree, but I also can't imagine plugging out to that degree at all. How do you get away from it? Can you? Like, does your individual choice in this matter at all?
Not in terms of withdrawing, I don't think. I've never... there's this Italian philosopher, Franco Berardi. He's called Bifo. And he used to be a Marxist, and I don't consider him one anymore, but he still does a lot of writing for, like, arts publications and stuff. And this is what he's always going on about, is, like, we have to withdraw. We have to, you know, like, go run in the meadows and, like... you know, make love in a hammock and all these, like, this, like, European stuff. It's just very, like, and we need to, like, put the cell phones down, and we need to, like, withdraw from, I think he calls it, like, semi-capital, you know, the capitalism, all these flowing signs and information, and we just need to, like, pull out. And I think that's, like, really silly. Like, we would die. Partly because you need money to live and stuff, in America at least. I think it's a little easier in some parts of Europe for some people, I guess. But also because, like, that's how our brains work and stuff. We've already been wired. The psychoanalyst named Felix Guattari has a story about the octopus who lives in this, like, really gross water, just full of pollution. And one day they come and take him out of the polluted water and put him in a clean tank in the aquarium, and he dies. And I think we're sort of like that octopus in a way, that, like, this is where we grew up, this is what formed our psyche. Like, you can't just, like, throw us in some clean water and try to start over or something, which is good because there's no clean water anyway.
One of the things that, like, Doug and I deal with a lot is... I'm trying to think of a way to tell a story without talking about the people in it. In general, a lot of times musicians will get offered to open up a show, and it'll be in front of a sold-out audience of like 600 to 1,000 people, and they'll offer you anywhere between $100 to $250, which, even though, like, the high end is 2.5 times what the low end is, it's still like the difference between 1% and 1.5% of the money that show makes. And a lot of the times the feeling of being an artist is like you are just elbowing over other people to have an opportunity to be exploited.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, please exploit me. I'll love it. Like, piss in my mouth. It'll be great.
Yeah, I mean, that's all not unique to that kind of work, man. I mean, all sorts of work.
Do you get anything if you say no?
Mostly no, I don't think.
So should we, like, volunteer to be exploited?
Look, like, I'm a freelancer. Like, I try to limit my exploitation as much as I am able to by choice as someone who must, like, work for money. But... that is limited by your need to work for money. So I guess I moved to Philadelphia. That's how I, like, lowered my rate of exploitation and, like, the amount of work I had to do.
Independent on if you need to or not, does it change anything if you choose to or not, other than your personal circumstances?
Not particularly, I don't think. Like, a person making that kind of lifestyle choice is not, like, the engine of history, in my personal opinion, my reading of history. So I guess that means I wouldn't, like, caution anyone to not to live a certain way because, like, they have an ethical duty to do X, Y, Z or whatever, because that's not really, I think, where it comes in, I guess. It's those kinds of choices. At the same time, I'm not going to, like, give someone a pat on the back for eating the right sandwich or whatever.
Yeah.
Unless it's, like, a really good...
What's the right sandwich?
It's a really good sandwich. I don't know. If you're talking about, like, you know, opting out of a system, you're still going to consume something, right? So what are you then talking about?
Well, it's not...
If you're, like, totally off... Someone who's totally... People who are totally off the grid, like, legit off the grid, I think that's cool. I don't think they are going to, like, change the world by dint of doing that or, like... Because that's not how history shifts. But I think it's, like... pretty cool.
Okay, let me rephrase what I want to get
they
at.
Should like have me over, we can hang out.
If you choose to not
land, though,
voluntarily,
right?
Exploit yourself, you win an ethical battle, but you don't win a material battle, because even though if you choose to get exploited, you still have something. It's not a lot, it's not what you're worth, but you have something. And in like a field where every choice you have is some form of exploitation, if you opt out, you end up with nothing. And there's constantly somebody that's willing to, like, undercut you.
Yep, that's true.
So is there anything to be gained in saying, I will choose nothing over less than what I'm worth?
I think it's something we decide all the time based on our circumstances, right? Like, and it's hard because... The truth is we all end up somewhere, those of us who have those kind of choices end up somewhere in the middle, usually, where you agree to do something that just your participation, you know, I write for magazines. Those magazines reproduce society as it's constituted now by shutting people out of those positions that I, you know, get to write in. And I know that just like in generally, and then I know that like specifically about certain editors or whatever that I might still work with. Then you have to make those sort of decisions. There was a publication called The Outline that maybe some people have read. Maybe they haven't. It's an internet publication, and they fired all their staffers and said they're shifting to full freelance labor. And some people who worked there said, like, well, fuck that. Like, please don't write for these guys. And I'd written for them in the past, and they pay pretty decent. I think the editing's fine. I think, like, the publication itself is fine. But for me, that's a line I'm not going to cross where someone calls for a, you know, a picket line or whatever. I'm not going to cross that. And that's in the absence of like political organizations to which we're actually responsible, which like I would love to be part of one. That would be great. That can like make those kind of judgments on an aggregate basis, which would be really awesome. We should get on that. But in the absence of that, it does like come down to individuals and what level of grasping you're going to like engage with, right?
At the end of the book, you list a series of futile solutions mm-hmm. to the problem,
like all the ones that you would think of. Yeah,
yeah. And it seems like the actual solution is collectivism. How do people get to that when they're just in a downward spiral of having to double down on individualism because it's the only thing that you can get any amount of security from? Like, there is a leap in, if I look out for myself, I at the very least know what security I can get from that through, I have to trust this person that we're going to do the same thing and work together against mm-hmm. this. How does somebody make that internal leap in their head?
It's hard. I mean, it's something that I've sort of been engaged with for as long as I can remember. For, you know, since I was like 12, I was going to demos and stuff and arguing with the principal about the constitutionality of the dress code and like thinking in terms of politics. That was always my life. And it's a struggle of opposed forces, and we need to think about the world as the struggle of opposed forces, because that's what it is. It's what constitutes our society. And once you do that, then you start thinking about how you can pick sides on whatever you're doing. Maybe that's easier to do in your work if you've got like a union or some sort of formal organization or the potential for one. But maybe you don't. Maybe you're a freelancer. Maybe you have to look for other parts of your life where you can engage in that sort of politics, because what you're talking about is politics. It's not just like any sort of collective project. It's a very specific collective project. And yeah, I think that's the only solution. I don't think there is one that relies on individual, like, choices, which is good because, like, who knows what kind of individual choices people...
I make terrible ones.
Yeah, right? It's, like, a bad thing to count on. I think we're, like, way better off making sort of smart collective decisions.
Okay. I have one last question for you. It's going to sound like a joke, but I swear to God it's not a joke. Why write a whole book about the pains of constantly having to be on and have your labor exploited to be on a podcast that just buys your bus ticket?
That sort of goes back to the what level of stuff you're willing to do. It's true. Like, I do a bunch of stuff that is not, like, necessarily economically rational, which is cool. The way I feel like is if someone wants to talk to me about my work, I try to be there and make it work and do that unless they're someone I find, like, really objectionable and they don't want to pay me. No, I don't really go talk to people I find really objectionable unless I have some, like, ulterior motive. Like, a really good ulterior motive. But, like, I go talk to high schools. I've gone and talked to a retirement community. It was really interesting talking to, like, a bunch of retired people about millennials. You got a range of opinions there. I'll even come to a, like, bar in Brooklyn, you know? I figure if someone can put in the time to, like, read my work, that's a privilege. I mean, I feel really, really lucky to do what I do because I get to write full-time as a job without, like, working for anyone in particular. And not a lot of people get to do that, and I don't, like... And it doesn't mean I'm, like, a big shot or whatever, but I don't overlook, like... If people want to engage with that, then it would be really shitty of me not to.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks
I appreciate
for having
it.
Me.
You want to come up and play? No? Changing your mind?
Totally changing my mind.
Do you know the words? I know the words.
This is my low-key setup.
Ma? Yeah, it's a... Well, we do what we... Ma, we... country girls make too. My heart is ice, my bones. Okay, next song.
We are pretty girls.
Yeah, let's see which one that is. So basically, last show, our release show, our sampler pooped out on us. And so now we're just like doing it on the laptop.
I think it's for the best. I really do. It's so nice. You look at everybody. They got laptops. Everybody's got a fucking laptop on stage. Let's do it.
But, like, I want to look like I do more.
Believe me, you're touching it. You're touching it. You're playing with it. It works.
Yeah, usually we have, like, a cello and a keyboard up here, but, like, I'm glad we didn't bring it.
We stripped it down.
We stripped it. Literally just
stripped
it. I don't know. I don't know. It's all
so, it's loading right now.
Yeah, it's loading. My computer is, like, from 2014. Wait, does everyone want to see the screen? Hold on. We love them. I fell asleep on it. Okay, now here's a song.
Meaning's always lost, so we don't mean.
So today, so all my clean laundry is on my floor because I'm disgusting and anxious. I also had all my like food things in my bed, but that's different. And I'm trying to find this shirt I'm looking for, this like Betty Boop shirt with a bunch of stains on it that I'm cutting out so I can wear it. And I discover my detergent just flipped over and just leaking all over my room. And
it's a mess.
Nothing matters anymore.
She texted me saying, "I'm crying. My detergent's all over the floor. What do I do?"
Yeah, he stepped in it, and then I had to give him my socks. Socks are valuable these days.
Always.
They're like doubloons. Does that make sense? No.
Shit.
Like crap, like this is shit.
What else do we have?
Paranoid.
What else do we got?
Beats for something.
There's the Metric cover
that we never finished. Ever. Like hours and hours just laying in your bed, and then we started like having some sort of sound fight with the bros downstairs on the patio, but they didn't even hear us, so it sucked.
We've
lost. They're in bands, though, apparently.
I'm like, how many bands are you in, bruh? It's like, have you ever heard of, like, have you ever heard of Lucy Dacus? She's a girl.
She's pretty good for a girl.
So they have a nice dog, but I believe I should steal it.
I think you should. I'll help you.
No, it would be a bunch of, like, black dog hair everywhere all over my nice white dress with a hole in it.
So nice.
And the strap that keeps on staying on.
Urban Outfitters, man. Quality. Quality.
Yeah, while I was buying this mouse, I went by Urban Outfitters, and I used to work there. And I'm pretty sure I almost got a bout of diarrhea just, like, walking by it. You know, I feel like this is, like, you know, It's Always Sunny when the gang breaks D and the guy, like, comes in front, like, opens for her, or she opens for the guy, and he's just talking about shit. That's me. I don't know anymore. Okay, here's a song.
Guys. The last one.
Last one, I'm losing my mind.
I'm so sorry.
disgusting. It was spontaneous. I had a
drink. Thank you, Dougie. Thank you, Jordan. Thank you, Irving. Everybody was amazing. Thank you.